shout aloud the name of our school, John Moffitt. And every day we're proud to say the name of our school, John Moffitt.
Hello and welcome to
The Moffitt Tattletale.
I'm Isabella.
And I'm Isaiah.
Today we have a special guest for a new series on essential workers.
Essential workers are people whose jobs are necessary for society to function.
Our guest today is Mr. Scott Hauer, who works on Medic 382 as an EMT for Second Alarmers Rescue Squad, serving Abington, Rockledge Borough, Jenkintown, and Fox Chase.
Welcome, Mr. Hauer, and thank you for being a part of the Moffitt Tattletale.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
What exactly does an EMT do?
So my job is primarily working on a medic unit. It's me, myself, and a paramedic. We respond to 911 calls for emergency medical services. This can be for anyone who's hurt, fallen down and can't get back up, has a medical emergency, car accidents, pretty much anything you can think of that involves people being hurt or sick. And our job is then to provide care and transport them to the appropriate emergency room.
What is the training process like to becoming an EMT?
So typically the EMT course, depending on if you do it full-time or part-time, it can be anywhere between 6 months to 1 year. After obtaining your EMT to work in the 911 EMS system, you also have to take what's called EMSVO, Emergency Vehicle Operators course. There we learn how to drive the ambulances, handle the operations of them, you know, basically use license sirens. So, and another important part too is the CPR process, which you have to maintain CPR and AED.
What inspired you to become an EMT?
I actually kind of got into it by chance. I'm an avid snowboarder, so I did ski patrol so I could get free lift tickets. And just helping people is something I enjoyed, so I kind of took it to the next stage and got my EMT and began working in EMS.
What is your favorite part of your job?
I definitely helping people is the top of it. I also like it because no day's the same. I don't have to sit in the office. I'm not confined anywhere. We're out and about on the street and always moving.
How many calls do you take in a day, and have calls increased during the current crisis?
So typically, we run anywhere between 3 to 4 calls a shift. Some days that number might be much higher. Some days it might be lower. During the current COVID crisis, we actually saw our call volume decrease. However, we were dealing with quite an increase of call volume with COVID patients and patients displaying symptoms of it.
Let's talk about working during the pandemic. Who gives you guidelines on how to work to stay safe from COVID-19? Is it your employer, the local, state, or federal government?
So most of it comes from the state. The state has certain protocols and procedures in place that we're all certified under. But then we also have county directives as well as internal squad-related policies. As far as patient care goes, that has primarily been from the state and the county. A lot of it has changed during this pandemic. We have to do certain things that keep us safer and the public safer. So certain procedures have changed. We've got and had to get adapted to certain equipment that we're not used to. A lot of times when we give people oxygen, it creates the risk of causing an increase of viral load. So we've been using filters and other means and platelets and masks over top of these pieces of equipment to help make it safer for everyone, including ourselves.
How has the job changed for you during the COVID-19 crisis? And how do you maintain your equipment to stop the spread?
So that actually is a very good question. We have taken lots of measures in order to help stop the spread as well as protect ourselves. We carry a wide variety of PPE equipment. Typically, when we know that we're having a potential COVID patient, we wear full gown, respirators, goggles, gloves, and putting this gear on and off is called donning and doffing. Donning's putting it on, doffing's taking it off. So we also have a checklist when we doff the gear that we're taking it off properly and not causing more exposure. As far as maintaining the equipment, we actually go through a very lengthy decon process. We have a fogger machine that sprays a peroxide-based cleaner and mists the whole back of the ambulance. Then we also take a spray spray every surface down, wipe every surface down, oftentimes doing it twice just to make sure.
Have you encountered anyone with COVID-19? Did that worry you?
Yes, we have encountered multiple COVID patients.
Thank you, Mr. Howe. That was really good.
All right, thank you.
That was great. Thank you for giving us your time.
Absolutely.
Do you have a moment to show us the back of the ambulance? Or?
Sure, absolutely. I can show you guys the different equipment and everything.
Awesome.
So, here's the front cab. What's different right now is we have like goggles hanging up, masks everywhere. These are the gowns we carry. We keep them in our overhead compartment. As I was talking about respirators, this is the respirator that we use. It's a MSA P1000. It's actually rated to filter out up to acidic level particles. The back of the truck, we have it set up differently. Usually we like shortcuts. So we usually have a lot of equipment out for what we call common calls, so we can kind of cheat and have that piece of equipment ready real quick. During this pandemic, we can't do that. Everything has to be sealed in compartments, in plastic bags, to spread any further spread. So this is the back of the truck. That's our 12-lead EKG monitor. One of the important things with COVID that we watch is pulse oximetry. That monitor can actually test how much oxygen is in your bloodstream. And people who are very sick with COVID, the tall tale sign will be that their pulse ox will be very low. So that's kind of like an important tool we've been using. Obviously, we have to clean it constantly. We have temporal thermometers. These we can actually take people's temperature without touching them and just basically put it right at their forehead and gives us their temperature. Every single patient we can encounter gets screened with, for temperature. And we also place a surgical mask like the one I'm wearing on every patient, regardless of what it calls for. It could just be a simple injury, non-COVID related, but everyone's been getting that. Show you the fogger real quick. We don't keep it in the easiest of spots, though. Unfortunately, our space is limited. And we still have to carry all the equipment we would normally carry. So this is the fogger. And we just basically just douse the whole back of the truck with this thing.
And how many people are usually in the back with you?
So we only ride two per truck, myself and the paramedic. So the two of us handle the calls. We used to have sometimes we have volunteers ride with us, but they might ride as a third and assist. But with this going on, we want to limit exposures to as few as people as possible. So it's basically we've kept the crews to a very minimal. Even fire department, law enforcement, they're typically not getting involved unless they have to. But we also unfortunately had to put a restriction on where normally we would take a family member, you know, a close friend who's with the patient. But due to the hospitals being closed to any visitors and also to our own increase of exposures, we will not take anyone with us unless the patient's a minor. The parent can come then.
Is Scott trained to do what he does? Like, does he have to do a certain training because of the coronavirus?
So no training was actually required. We actually have a basic exposure control training in EMT school. However, this is very fluid, very dynamic, something none of us have ever seen before. Even the people who have been doing it for 20-plus years have never experienced something like this. So we actually had a lot of internal training, and a lot of the information was changing constantly, so we had to adapt our training basically each week. I'm very lucky for the company I work for. They're very progressive. They're very good. They put their employees first, safety first. So we actually had to go through weekly video briefings with our medical director. He's a physician at Abington ER, our chief, our infectious control officer. And there was also a lot of brushing up on skills that, yeah, we're trained for, but we don't typically use too often. Like I was talking about the donning and doffing of the gear. Typically, that's something we, until this time, we were not used to. We did not do often. Now we do it multiple times a shift. So we made sure we kept honing our skills each week. Each week we would discuss different things, what new findings the CDC and the WHO were finding with this disease, and just changing our tactics and adapting to all the new information that kept coming out.
Is there ever a time where you went to work and you were scared?
We're always scared a little bit. But, you know, you don't really let that get the best of you. You just kind of
do the job that we're, you know, trained and paid to do. I know for myself, I'm not necessarily scared of COVID myself because I don't really fit any of the guidelines for it to be dangerous. But I do worry about spreading to someone else who it could potentially hurt. So that's always a fear in the back of my mind.
My question is, how many COVID patients are there, like, per day? And have you seen?
So they really differ. There's really no rhyme or reason to the pattern of the call line we receive. You know, when someone calls 911 has emergency, like, they've tried to study it before in the past, but there's no way to tell. Typically, most of the time I work night shifts. Usually there's less calls at night. Days usually busier. So the company that I work for as a whole, we have 5 stations throughout the county, and we run around 12,000 calls a year. So, you know, you can divide that among the 5 of them, and it kind of gives you an average. But like I said, typically it's anywhere between 4 to 6 calls a shift.
Now, was there a time where you got called in and got so scared because you had no idea what was going on?
Again, we kind of just keep fear in the back of our mind. We try not to think about it too much. We really practice very safe measures and operations to keep ourselves and the public safe. Oftentimes, we really do not know what we're getting into. You know, usually when people are calling 911 for a medical emergency, it's a pretty bad day for them. They're trying to relay that information to the phone to the dispatcher who relays it to us. So it's tough to get very precise, accurate information. So we've had times where the call sounds like nothing, like someone stubbed their toe, and we get there and hear it's a cardiac. So it really kind of differs. Like, we always prepare for the worst, thinking that we're going into a terrible call, and then hope that it's not.
How do you feel about COVID-19?
How do I feel? Well, I've always been someone who's very interested in medicine and science. So as far as that, I find it absolutely fascinating. This is a very elegant disease, something that we've never seen before. I really enjoy following up on the science of how they're studying it. However, it's hurting a lot of people, and that I don't like. It's something I wish that had not, you know, come about and reached our country. But unfortunately, it did, and you know, we just got to keep as many people safe as possible and prevent the spread of it.
Thank you for being our guest today. We appreciate it. Come back anytime.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, guys.
That concludes episode 1 in our series on essential workers. Be sure to follow us on social media at John Moffitt Elementary.
And visit our site at philasd.org/Moffitt to find when the next episode of Moffitt Tattletale hits.
Bye.
Bye.
We always try.